Victims of Higher Space.
Assistant, begin audio recording.
Recording initiated.
I'm told you wish to make an official statement for the record. You understand this is being recorded and may be used in evidence.
Yes, sir. My name is Barker. This is Patricia Morgan, Nurse Morgan. We work with the doctor.
We were there. We saw it all happen.
Did you? Where is she, then?
That's very complicated.
But you know?
We know.
Barker?
Well, sir, I kind of understand it. I'm not sure.
Well, you two had better start trying to explain it to me. I understand the doctor sees psychiatric patients at her house.
Sort of. The doctor only takes unusual cases regular methods can't treat. I love the house. It's such a beautiful Victorian. Going to work feels like stepping back in time. Beautiful garden with perfectly trimmed hedges. A long gravel path from the driveway up to a wide front porch with colorful flowers and hanging pots.
And the doctor insists the house be kept spotless, not a speck of dust.
Are you sure you're not realtors? I'm not buying the house. Get to the point.
To understand what happened, you need to understand Dr. Silence, and her house tells you a lot about her.
It really does, sir. Everything has a place. Nothing is out of place. Everything has a plan, a purpose. The house feels so orderly that you know it can only belong to someone who sees too much chaos.
If you say so. Now, will one of you please tell me what happened?
Well, sir, it started when a new patient arrived. I went to tell the doctor about him. There's an extraordinary gentleman to see you, Dr. Silence.
Why extraordinary? Why extraordinary, Barker?
He's so thin, Doctor. I could hardly see him at all at first. He was inside before I could ask his name.
And who brought him here?
He came alone, Doctor, on foot as far as I could tell. There was no car. He pushed by me before I could say a word. I turned and stood there in confusion watching him. He moved so soft.
And where is this gentleman now?
I really couldn't say, Doctor. I left him standing in the hall.
But why in the hall, Barker? Why not in the waiting room? Did he frighten you?
I
think he did, Doctor, if I may say so.
I seemed to lose sight of him. He came in so oddly, just like a cold wind.
When you've learned to interpret these feelings and sensations better, you'll feel no fear, but only a great sympathy. So the gentleman made you feel odd, did he?
That was it.
And he brings no introduction to me? No letter or anything?
I beg your pardon, Doctor. The gentleman handed me this for you.
My friend, please see the man who brings you this note, though I doubt even you can help him. I know you'll find his predicament worth your time, because it relates to some of your boldest research. Lilac. Barker, go back and find this gentleman. Show him into the green study. Don't reply to his questions or speak more than necessary, but think kind, helpful, sympathetic thoughts as strongly as you can. Remember what I've told you before about the importance of thinking. Try to put curiosity out of your mind and think as gently, sympathetically, affectionately as you can.
Very well, Doctor.
That's where I come in. The doctor has been teaching me how to observe new patients to gain quick insights, to be another pair of eyes for her. She buzzed me to let me know there was a patient in the green study to observe.
That meant the doctor didn't expect trouble, or she'd have me take the patient to the white room.
What's the difference?
The white room is padded, and equipped to restrain those who may become a danger.
We hardly ever need it. Those are rare cases. The green study is so soothing. I love going in there. You can just feel your tension melt away when you go through the door. It's all done in deep green, gentle lighting. You can smell just a hint of lavender, and the aquarium makes a nice little bubbling noise. There's a liquor cabinet for those who need the extra help to relax. The chairs are so soft, and the one for the patient is immovable, which
helps. Hold on a minute. Padded rooms and liquor cabinets? What kind of therapy is this?
We aren't a licensed practice, Sergeant. That's why we operate out of a private home. Our patients have been through the system, and the system couldn't help them, so they're referred to us. And before you ask, we don't charge anyone. Dr. Silence funds her own services from her family wealth. She can't help everyone, but she certainly never harms anyone.
So you said you were going to observe the patient? What did you mean by that?
We use a virtual reality system tied into a sensor array. It lets me experience and explore the green study with live input, so I'm essentially in the room without the patient knowing.
That sure doesn't sound very ethical.
Our patients want help, not your narrow-minded rulebook mindset which has already failed them. Anyway, I put on the headset and gloves and activated the system. Doctor, there's nobody in the green study. Are you sure Barker brought him in?
I'm sure. Do you notice anything out of the ordinary?
Oh, I see his hat. He must have left it here and gone to the restroom. That's it.
Try to stop assuming what must have happened. Just relax yourself. Open yourself to the room.
Okay.
I've been trying to teach you to unlearn all the prejudices you've learned to filter your experiences through, to bring you to the raw experience. Go through the five senses. What are you experiencing?
I don't have the taste sensor hooked up, and I don't think I want to lick the chairs anyway.
Fine, the four senses.
I feel the gentle breeze of the air conditioning. I smell a slight dampness, I think, like wet clothes. I hear the air conditioning, of course, the ticking of the clock, the aquarium, and the faint noise of a band practicing somewhere outside. I see the sunlight filtering through the window, the chairs and table, the hat, a pair of gloves, an umbrella. Wait, it's hot out and hasn't rained in weeks. Why the gloves and umbrella?
Don't get stuck on the why yet. Have patience. When you put everything you're feeling together, what do you sense?
I sense I'm not alone.
Interesting. Focus on that feeling and see if it leads you to a particular part of the room.
The fireplace. Something between me and the fireplace. But there's nothing there. There can't be.
Don't presume what can and can't be, nurse. Focus carefully on the area where you feel the presence. Is it really as empty as it first appears?
The clock. The clock on the mantle. I could see all of it before, but there's a part of it I can't see now.
Something has interceded between you and it?
I see something now. A line. It goes all the way down to the floor at the base of the fireplace.
Just a line? No shape?
That's right. Well, it's broadening.
Your attention was first drawn to the clock level. Focus there, and perhaps you'll begin to make out detail.
There's a disc. A luminous disc.
Does it suggest anything to you?
Sam! I mean, Dr. Silence! It's an eye, and it's looking straight at me.
Calm yourself, nurse. Take a deep breath. Do you sense any negative vibrations? Any malicious intent?
No. No.
Now, what do you see around the eye?
Now it's a man!
No alien, no specter, just a man?
Just an ordinary middle-aged man. The only unusual thing I can see about him is he's so thin. And, Doctor, he's still looking straight at me. But how can he know my virtual location?
Oh, brother.
Sergeant, please let Nurse Morgan explain.
You go along with this nonsense, Barker.
I didn't see it, sir, but I have my reasons for believing it. I'll come to that later. Go on, Nurse.
Well, Dr. Silence decided it was time for us to go in and meet the patient face to face.
Or call the Ghostbusters.
It's all recorded.
Maybe. So is Stranger Things. That doesn't make it real. If you didn't make this all up, the doctor must have hacked your VR rig to play a joke on you.
I can do without your theories, Sergeant. Anyway, I met Dr. Silence outside the Green Study, the real one I mean, and we entered together.
I'm Dr. Silence. This is my assistant, Nurse Morgan. We were observing you on the VR feed, as you noticed. We find it of great assistance sometimes.
I understand without explanation. You get the true note of someone in that way when he thinks himself unobserved. Only in my case, I fear you saw very little. My case, as you of course grasp, is extremely peculiar. Uncomfortably peculiar. Indeed, unless your friend Dr. Lilac had positively assured
me. My friend sent you to me, and that's enough for me. Please, be seated, Mr.
Mudge. Pierre Mudge.
Take this chair, Mr. Mudge. I think you'll find it comfortable.
Promise me you won't use the narcotic buttons. Also, I ought to mention that anything you think of vividly, like the buttons, will reach my mind. That's part of my condition.
Very well. You have my promise.
I'm glad the chair is nailed to the floor. It suits me admirably.
Don't feel rushed in explaining your condition. My whole day is at your service.
Do you mind if I take notes, Mr. Mudge?
Please do, Nurse Morgan. I appreciate a thorough and methodical approach.
Mr. Mudge, I can guess something of your case, but please, tell us in your own words what brings you here today.
The fact is, and this is my case in a nutshell, which may be all that a doctor of your marvelous development requires. The fact is, Dr. Silence, I am a victim of higher space. That's what's the matter with me. Higher space.
I see. Higher space?
Higher space. That's what it is, Dr. Silence. Do you think you can help me with that?
I'm quite sure I can help. Sympathy must always help. Suffering always elicits my sympathy. Your suffering is evident. Tell me all about how you reached this strange condition, and I've no doubt I can be of some assistance. I feel sure it was not by accident that you became familiar with the terrors of what you term higher space. For higher space is no mere external measurement, it's an inner development, and one we must recognize as abnormal, since it's beyond the reach of the senses at the present stage of evolution.
Oh, the relief it is to finally talk to someone who can understand. And you're right, that no mere chance led me here. In a sense, chance now governs it. I mean, my entering the condition of higher space seems to depend on the chance of this or that circumstance. For instance, the mere sound of that German band sent me off. Not all music does, but certain sounds, certain vibrations key me up to the requisite pitch and off I go. Wagner's music always does it, and that band must have been playing a stray bit of Wagner. But I'll come to all that later. First, I must ask you to send Barker away from the door where he is presently fixing his ear, his curiosity having gotten the better of him.
Barker, leave us. Mr. Mudge requires his privacy.
I'm sorry, Doctor, I didn't...
Now I can go on. You've managed to put me completely at ease, and I feel you will understand. But you must be patient with me if I go into details that are already familiar to you. Details of higher space, I mean. And if I seem stupid when I have to describe things that transcend the power of language and are really therefore indescribable...
That goes without saying. To know higher space is an experience that defies description, and we're obliged to use more or less intelligible symbols. But please proceed. Your vivid thoughts will tell me more than your halting words.
My mother was French and my father was English. Hence my name, Pierre Mudge. He met in Botswana, where I was born. My father died before I ever saw him. My mother inherited money from her family's diamond mine, and when she died early in my childhood, I was left alone with wealth and strange freedom. I had no guardian, no family, not any connection in the world to look after me. And what laws there were about orphans in Botswana at the time were made flexible by my money. I therefore grew up with very little formal education, but with the resources to teach myself whatever I wished. This was to my advantage, for I learned none of the deceitful rubbish taught in schools, and so I had nothing to unlearn when I awakened to my true love, mathematics, especially higher mathematics and higher geometry. These subjects I seemed to know instinctively. The principles were in my blood, and I simply raced through the ordinary stages and beyond. I can't explain it. Perhaps I was simply recollecting memories of what I'd learned before in a previous existence.
Reincarnation, complete with knowledge?
The mechanism by which Mr. Mudge became such an adept learner is not essential to his case. It's enough to know what he learned. Please continue, Mr. Mudge.
The audacious speculations of Bolyai, the amazing theories of Gauss, that through a point more than one line could be drawn parallel to a given line, the possibility that the angles of a triangle are together greater than two right angles if drawn upon immense curvatures, the breathless intuitions of Beltrami and Lobachevsky, Einstein's curved space and general relativity, all these I hurried through and emerged panting but unsatisfied upon the verge of my world, my higher space possibilities. In a word, my disease.
Non-Euclidean geometries and extra-dimensional space.
Here came a change. Beyond this point, I had to go slowly and laboriously, with no further natural intuition. I sought for the theories and speculations of others. I studied the speculations of physicists on extra dimensions and superstring theory. Some believe our three-dimensional world is a submanifold corresponding to a brain in a ten-dimensional universe, while others believe the higher dimensions are compactified on a very small scale. But really, they know very little, and I was left thirsting for more. I came to a point where I had advanced so far that I found no one else to guide me.
You really believe you've advanced further in geometry and physics than anyone else in the world?
You, of course, Dr. Silence, understand something of what I'm driving at with these stammering words. Though you cannot perhaps yet guess what depth of pain my new knowledge brought me to, nor why an acquaintance with a new dimension of space should prove a source of misery and terror.
I have my theories, but please go on.
This room we now sit in has one side open to space. Higher space. The closed box only seems closed. There's a way in and out of a soap bubble without breaking the skin.
You tell me no new thing.
It follows necessarily that people only see portions of all objects, never the true and complete shape. Three measurements, but not the fourth. The new direction is concealed from us, and when I hold this book and move my hand all around it, I have not really made a complete circuit. We only perceive those portions of any object which exist in our three dimensions, but the rest escapes us. But once we learn to see in higher space, objects begin to appear to us as they actually are, only they will hardly be recognizable. Now you may begin to grasp something of what I am coming to.
I've made some tentative experiments in the direction myself. I'm beginning to understand what you must have suffered.
You are the one person in all the world who can understand and sympathize.
A fair number of us have tiptoed on the outskirts of higher space. I only know one who advanced as far as I believe you have. Continue, please.
Well, I meditated carefully on what I'd learned until I arrived at an imaginative conception of four-dimensional space. The tesseract, the figure whose boundaries are cubes, I grew to know by heart. That is to say, I saw it mentally, for my eye, of course, could never take in a new dimension. I could imagine a cube and see all its sides at once. Its top was not foreshortened, nor its far side or base invisible. I saw the whole thing out flat, so to speak. I also saw the content, the insides.
You weren't able to enter this new world yourself?
Not then. I was only able to conceive intuitively what it was like and how exactly it must look. Later, when I slipped in and saw objects in their entirety, unlimited by the paucity of our senses, I very nearly lost my life. For you see, space does not stop at a fourth dimension. It extends in all possible new ones. and we may conceive it as containing any number of new dimensions. In other words, there is no space at all, but only a condition. Meanwhile, I come to grasp the strange fact that the objects in our normal world appear to us only partially. From this starting point, I began further studies and experimentations and continued them for years. I had money, and I had no friends. I lived in solitude and experimented. My intellect had little part in the work, for intellectually it was all unthinkable. Never was the limitation of mere reason more plainly demonstrated. And what I learned and knew and did is all impossible to put into language, since it describes experiences transcending the experiences of human beings. It's only some of the results, what you would call the symptoms of my disease, that I can give you. And even these must often appear as absurd contradictions and impossible paradoxes.
The ineffable is my professional specialty, Mr. Munch.
I can only tell you that I reached sometimes a point of view from which all the great puzzles of the world became plain to me. I understood what they call in the yoga books the great heresy of separateness. Why, all great teachers have urged the necessity of loving your neighbor. How humanity is all really one, and why the loss of self is necessary to salvation and the discovery of the true life of the soul.
Your speculations have been my own long ago. I fully realize the force of your words. People are not separate at all in the sense that they imagine.
All this about the very much higher space I only dimly, very dimly conceived of course. But what did happen to me was the higher accident of the simpler disaster. Oh dear. How shall I put it?
Take your time. Remember, your thoughts tell me more than your words.
It was simply this. But accidentally, after years of experimentation, I one day slipped bodily into the world of four dimensions. I discovered, that is, and my ordinary three-dimensional body was but an expression, a partial projection of my higher four-dimensional body.
You slipped into higher space without knowing how you achieved it?
Certain people, certain human atmospheres, even certain thoughts and emotions, the radiations of certain combinations of color, and above all, the vibrations of certain kinds of music will suddenly throw me into a state that I can only describe as an intense inner vibration. And behold, I'm off in the direction at the right angles to all our known directions, off in the direction the cube takes when it begins to trace the outlines of the tesseract, off inside myself, into my breathless higher space. There I have to stay until these vibrations subside, or until they do something which I cannot find words to describe properly or intelligibly to you. And then, behold, I'm back again. First I disappear, then I reappear, sometimes in the same place, and sometimes in a different place. Only I cannot control my entrance nor my exit.
So that's why
a few minutes ago the nurse found me gone and then saw me return. The music of that Richard Badden sent me off. Nurse Morgan's intense thinking about me brought me back. When the band had stopped its Wagner, I saw the nurse watching me through that virtual reality apparatus, and I saw Barker's intention of listening at the door later, and your thought about the narcotic buttons. When in that state, the content of your mind, as of your body, is open to me as the day. Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear!
Are you all right, Mr. Munch?
I'm just frightening myself in remembering. I apologize. At first, my new experiences were so vividly interesting that I felt no alarm. There was no room for it. The alarm came a little later.
You mean when you actually penetrated far enough into that state to experience yourself as a normal portion of it?
our sensory inputs and the way our brains are designed to process things through, in Kant's terms, the forms of intuition, it hides the truth of existence from us. In a deep dreamless sleep, these limitations are gone. Only normally people are unable to retain any memory of that state. Somehow, perhaps because I'd come so close in my daytime experiments, I began to fully perceive and remember that I was involuntarily entering the four-dimensional world, the world of things in themselves, as opposed to our world of things as they appear.
You had no control?
Not at first. A higher-dimensional body cannot sleep. But I would have infinitely preferred dull sleep to the knowledge which was thrust on me. Unable to control my movements, I wandered. Partial development and premature arrival attracted me to parts of this new world that alarmed me more and more. It was the awful waste and drift of a monstrous world, so utterly different to all we know and see that I cannot even hint at the nature of the sights and objects and beings in it. More than that, I cannot even remember them. I cannot now picture them to myself even, but I can recall only the memory of the impression they made upon me, and the horror and devastating terror of it all.
I can sense how deeply the experience troubled you, and still troubles you.
It's not the disappearing and reappearing that I mind. What's so distressing is seeing people and objects in their weird entirety, in their true and complete shapes. It introduced me to a world of monsters. Dogs and cats, which I loved, people, trees, children, all that I have considered beautiful in life, everything, from a human face to Yosemite Valley, appears to me in a different shape and aspect to all I've known before. Perhaps I can't convince you why this should be terrible, but I assure you that it is. Hear a human voice emanating from this bizarre appearance, which I scarcely recognize as a human body, is ghastly, simply ghastly. To see inside everything and every body is a form of insight peculiarly distressing. To be so confused in geography as to find myself one moment in a frigid plain in Siberia, and the next on a suburban street in Sacramento, and then at a bustling market in Beijing, or possibly at all three places simultaneously, is absurdly terrifying. With space and time unified in the fourth dimension, often I find myself in the past or the future. I'm not sure what year it is now, or whether I've even seen Dr. Lilac yet. Your imagination will readily furnish other details without my multiplying my experiences now. But you have no idea what it all means, and how I suffer.
This Munch guy sure seems to be a talker, much like a certain nurse. How do you even remember all of this?
I took meticulous notes. See?
Well, good for you. Doesn't prove anything, though.
I beg your pardon, sir, but nobody said it did.
Fine. Let's get on with this yarn, then. I'm off at 5.
I noticed Mr. Mudge looked very thin and white and oddly unsubstantial, and he sometimes glanced about him as though he saw into this other world he'd been talking about. I also noticed he was sweating profusely, and I could see Dr. Silence was sweating, too. The two of them were connected in some special, exhilarating way. Somehow it seemed the presence of Mudge in the room brought Dr. Silence closer to higher space. I didn't understand half of what they were talking about, but even I felt affected by the man.
I felt something as well, in the brief time that I was around him. Just being in the room with Mr. Mudge changes you.
I'll have to look him up sometime.
Anyway, Dr. Silence retrieved a small red book. She pulled a key out of her pocket to open the small lock on the cover.
Mr. Mudge, I've heard of experiences like yours only once before, in this book written by my great-grandfather John Silence, the original owner of this house. He suffered as you do.
Your great-grandfather? Did he find a cure for higher space?
He did, but it seems almost a pity to cure you. Your suffering may lie in the fact that you alternate between the two worlds and are never wholly in one or the other. you're on the way to discovering great things. Although you may lose your life in the process, that is, your life here in the world of three dimensions, you would thereby lose nothing of much value, and what you might gain is infinitely greater. You'll pardon my apparent rudeness.
You see through me, Dr. Silence. Almost as insightfully as if you were in higher space yourself.
I believe some strange predisposition, perhaps from your former lives, if we accept those, favored the development of your disease, and the fact that you've had no formal training at school has further caused your rapid movement along the lines of direct inner experience. None of the knowledge you foreshadowed has come to you through the senses, of course.
You are merely talking to gain time. This thinking aloud delays us. I see what you are coming to. Only please be quick, for something is going to happen. The band is again coming down the street, and if it plays Wagner, I shall be off in a twinkling.
I'll be quick. I was going to tell you the cure the book suggests. The way is this. You must learn to block the entrances to prevent the center's acting.
True, true, utterly true. But how can that be done?
By concentration. They're all within you, these centers. Although outer causes such as color, music, and other things lead you towards them. These external things you can't hope to destroy, but once the entrances are blocked, they'll lead you only to bricked walls and closed channels. You'll no longer be able to find the way.
Quick, quick! How is this to be effected? Catch me! Hold me down! For God's sake, keep me here! I'm bleeding already! Alcohol! Alcohol! Give me alcohol! It's the quickest way! Alcohol before I'm out of reach!
Nurse!
Here, brandy.
Hurry. Pour it in his mouth while it's still visible.
Just hold it close. Don't waste time opening it. Every object has a side open to me. Thanks. Enough. It deadens the vibrations.
My great-grandfather's book will help you. It explains how he blocked the entrances to save himself. Follow these instructions and you'll no longer enter the state of higher space.
Find me a passage that can help before the band returns.
From page 42, an entrance to a higher dimension can be blocked only by the merging of subject and object. Entrances are not truly distinct from non-entrances, for all existence is in all dimensions at all times. The most effective way to block an entrance is to merge with it.
This can be achieved in a meditative state by stepping outside of oneself to see that there is no difference between oneself, the perceived entrance, and the rest of the universe. One cannot be drawn into something which one already is. When the self vanishes, so too the entrance vanishes. This meditative process retrains the mind to disassociate the trigger, blocking the applicable entrance from then on.
Quick! Stop that gun! Send it away! Block the entrances! Block the entrances! Give me the red book! Oh! Oh! Oh!
I've got you.
You're still fading too fast this time.
Block the entrances! Block the entrances!
He's gone!
I fear he's much further gone this time. I can't sense him anymore.
And the red book is still here.
I'll take that.
We can only hope that Mr. Mudge, wherever he is, can absorb the information he needs.
Nurse, please fetch Barker and bring him here.
Very well, Doctor.
Meanwhile, I'll attempt to concentrate on Mr. Mudge. I'll try to think through the process of blocking entrances with him to guide him.
Where is...
Mr. Mudge is gone, Barker.
He's not taking his hat with him, Doctor?
Mr. Mudge requires no hat where he is now, but he may return for it.
And the umbrella, Doctor?
And the umbrella.
He didn't go out my way, Doctor, if you please.
Mr. Mudge has his own way of coming and going. If he returns by the door at any time, remember to bring him instantly to me and be kind and gentle with him and ask no questions. Also, remember, Barker, to think pleasantly, sympathetically, affectionately of him while he's away. Mr. Mudge is a very suffering gentleman.
Yes, Dr. Silence, I will.
Barker, make a parcel of Mr. Mudge's things, along with the red book. Address it to 3133 Pacific Street, Placerville, California. Send it there exactly a week from today, marked to be called for.
But... Yes, Doctor.
Mumbai. Just slipped out again. Locked an entrance. Getting better at it. 1,000 thanks. Address, Placerville.
That was Mr. Mudge? He's safe?
Safe. I can't help to think what he's losing, though. Higher space. A unique gift to see things as they really are.
I wonder...
That's how it was.
You expect me to believe the doctor simply vanished in front of your eyes into a higher dimension?
That's exactly what happened, Sergeant.
Statement complete. Assistant, end recording.
Recording stopped.
I think you've both spent so much time with the mentally ill that you're now crazier than your patients. I'm holding you both for a mandatory psychiatric evaluation. And if Dr. Silence doesn't turn up, you may be detained again on murder charges.
Victims of Higher Space is written, produced, engineered, and directed by Paul Nero, and is based on A Victim of Higher Space by Algernon Blackwood. Dr. Sam Silence was portrayed by Lindsay Townsend. Pierre Mudge was played by Mark Hoffman. Nurse Patricia Morgan was portrayed by Megat the Reed. Barker was Paul Moss.
The policeman and the voice assistant were played by Paul Nero.
Sound effects courtesy freesound.org. Music courtesy freepd.com. This program is licensed for free redistribution without alterations. Copyright 2020. Find this online at quietpleas.org/originals.